Good morning. Welcome into the Night at 10 show. It's American DA Live on Friday, the first day of August, brought to you by Landscaper's Corner, 1305 Old Frankfort Pike. Landscaper's Corner has the largest selection of natural stone in our area. Call them at 225-9433. Our question of the day is brought to you by United Structural Systems, a professional foundation repair company in business for over 20 years. iFixFoundations.com, 859-254-7700. The question is this: should the U.S. allow the children who cross the border illegally to stay here as refugees? You tell us at WVLKAM.com. Tune in for the results with Cruiser and Crew between noon and 3. Yesterday, our question was, do you agree with the suspension of the Henry Clay principal for drinking a beer on a school trip when no students were present? 63% said no. They don't agree with that. 25% said yes, and 12% were undecided. Well, this is American DA Live. Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson is with us. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Jack.
You know how you almost every week, every couple of weeks, tell me a story about when you're out in the stores and going one place or another, people stop you and they talk about how much they enjoy the show. Mm-hmm. I was emceeing an event last night for an organization called OWL. They were having a golf tournament, and a lady sat down at the table with my wife and me, and she said, were you on the radio this morning, or is it afternoons that you're on? I just thought I'd share that.
It's good.
It's good.
I mean,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Obviously a big fan.
Did you tell that sweet young lady to get with it? For crying out loud, woman.
We got to be light here for a few minutes because this subject today is anything but. Tell us who you brought with you this morning.
Well, Andrea Mattingly Williams. She went for the longest time wanting to be Andrea Mattingly Williams. And then, it just, everybody tries that, and then they try it, and they try it, and they finally they say, it's take your pick.
Yeah.
And so it's now Andrea Williams. She married a neat guy named Jason Williams.
Good morning, Andrea. Back for the second week in a row. I don't think we've ever done this, have
we? No, I don't think so.
Yeah, well, we're glad to have you back.
And thanks.
And with us also is Kathy High, who is the victim's advocate in our office.
Kathy, good morning.
Good morning, Jack.
Thanks for coming.
Now,
I know you didn't have any choice, but thanks for coming anyway.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
Good.
See that?
Yeah, she
is. She's one of the nicest people that I've ever met.
Oh, thank you.
How long have you been with Ray's office?
I've been there almost 14 years.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's nice.
Yeah, in spite of the fact that she's a University of Tennessee graduate.
No, you didn't have to say that. Hi. You could have talked all day and I'd said that.
Well, she's a dandy. This is a case that we put some guidelines on ourselves. This is a case that involves some kind of juvenile, the young victim. We're not going to say names of the defendant. We're not going to say names of the victim. We're going to try not. This also involves an abortion.
Okay.
And it's something that we don't want to turn this into an argument over that kind of stuff.
Right.
So
right.
If somebody calls and wants to raise heck about
it. Yeah, we're not going to debate abortion.
Yeah.
Right.
But this is really a kind of a crummy case that put some young person behind the eight ball, and the question is, can that child get up, get dusted off, and move into the rest of her life with some success?
And it does have a side part of the story that's very heartwarming too, but we'll save that.
Right.
Yeah.
It's the it's a group that Kathy High is a practically professional football sideline cheerleader for.
Good.
It's called Bikers Against Child Abuse, and it's a interesting, sounds weird, but it's a neat operation, and we want to give them a lot of credit for helping us get this young woman through the process. Okay, Andrea, so how did we give us some information about how did this case come about?
Well, we got the case about a year ago, but what happened is the victim and her family specifically her father, had moved here from a different state. They had been here about 3 months when she began crying at school.
How old was she?
She was 13 at the time. Her friends asked her what was wrong. She disclosed to them what had been taking place, that her father had been molesting her.
For how long did she say?
She had only lived with her father about a year. She and her mother had lived in a different state. She had been picked on at school, typical middle school girl stuff. So her parents, although they didn't live in the same state, had communicated throughout her life about her, and she'd gone to stay with her dad various times throughout her life and visit him, decided because she was having a hard time at school, maybe a change of scenery would be good for her. So she went to live with her dad in a different state. Her dad, her stepmom, two other siblings, the mom, the stepmother's children, and she all came to live here in Lexington, had been here about 3 months. So she had lived with her dad this time for about a year, but only here in Lexington for about 3 months. She disclosed to a couple of friends at school what was taking place.
And what was taking place?
That he, since she had lived with him this past year, that he had been sexually abusing her, having sex with her, sodomizing her, and touching her.
And we need to point out, in case you missed it, this is biological father.
Yes.
This isn't stepfather.
No, this is her biological father.
Not that the other would make it okay. I don't mean to imply that, but this is even worse.
Right. Yes, this is her biological father. At that point, her friend said, okay, you have to tell a teacher. She told the teacher. Teacher immediately sent her to the counselor. When the victim first came to the counselor's office, was so distraught that she couldn't get out anything. She was just distraught at that point because she had finally began to tell someone. The counselor let her sit there for a while, got her water, got her some snacks to try to calm her down. The counselor was able to do that, and then she began to disclose to the counselor at the school. At that point, anytime abuse is reported to a school by anyone, the school is under an obligation under state law to report that immediately to the police, in which the school did at this point. A detective from the Crimes Against Children Unit from the Lexington Division of Police, as well as a social worker for the Cabinet for Families and Children, reported to the school. At that point, the victim did not want to disclose to the male detective, so the social worker went in and sat with the victim, and our victim began at that point to explain to the social worker what had been taking place.
Let me stop Andrea right there. And introduce Kathy again. Kathy High is a victim's advocate who's been with our office for 14 years. One of the things that one of her responsibilities is working with crimes against children. And so, Kathy, tell us a little bit about what kind of things begin to happen when we have these kind of cases involving this is a 13-year-old who basically is who's being, I guess, forced to have sex with her biological father. Tell us what happened then.
Well, in Lexington, our cabinet and our Crimes Against Children unit work really well together. They're actually mandated to work together, but they work really well together. They go as a team, and they set up interviews and, you know, get involved and make sure the child is safe. We have a children's advocacy center here that does a really great job of having many services under one roof. It's like a child-friendly home, and they do forensic interviews there, medical exams, counseling. They have advocates there who kind of help get families set up with services. So in this case, at that point, the police and the social worker you know, do a great job of working together in investigating.
Was that child taken out of that home immediately?
She was. As soon as she disclosed to the social worker has an obligation, as well as the Crimes Against Children Unit, to make sure that child is safe. So she was immediately removed that day because her only family here in Lexington was her father and her stepmother.
And you couldn't send her back,
and
obviously.
Not at this point, because her mother was out of state.
Yeah.
And the Cabinet for Families and Children has to go through certain procedures to send a child back out of state, even with a biological parent.
We're taking a break. 253-5959, touch star 5. 24 after 9, 924, 253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T. Toll free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590 or email. Mail jackpatty at wvlkam.com. Andrea, I want to ask you a personal question about this case.
Okay.
Had you done any kind of similar case before this one?
Yes. This one actually went to trial. A lot of the cases that we have that are of this nature do not go to trial, but this one did. And yes, I have had other
incest cases.
The other one was not an incest case, but it was a child victim sodomy case. But this is the first incest case in the 9 years. I've had other incest cases that have pled guilty, but this is the first one that I've had that went to trial.
When you got the case, what was your first thought? I mean, how did you react to it?
Well, I got three incest cases all in the same rotation. And to be honest, I think anybody in our office, when we get incest cases, your heart just drops.
Yeah.
Because these aren't the type of cases that you want to come up in your rotation.
Yeah.
Just because you know the subject matter and just the emotional toll that it takes on everyone involved in the case. So I don't think there's anybody in our office that gladly takes
would sign,
these.
Would sign up for that. Yeah, right, exactly. Okay, Ray.
So this young woman has disclosed. That's the term they use when these things happen. She disclosed. The police and the social workers got involved.
Yes.
And so what's the next step in the investigation of this?
Anytime a child discloses, if the activity, the sexual encounter has been recent, they will always schedule an exam, usually at the Children's Advocacy Center, a head-to-toe examination of the child to, one, determine if there's any evidence, but two, to determine if the child is pregnant or has any sexually transmitted diseases that need to be treated or anything of that nature. And they will immediately start getting that child services. The child in this case did go for an exam at the Children's Advocacy Center.
Let me interrupt. The Children's Advocacy Center has a medical area and a doctor, medical doctor, pediatrician that does these things not regularly. And
Is it a female doctor?
Yes.
Good. Yeah.
And so what happens then is that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to brag
yes.
about the Children's Advocacy Center because they do a wonderful job.
And let me throw a brag in here for the doctor at the Children's Advocacy Center. During voir dire in this case, we have an obligation.
That's jury selection.
Jury selection. We have an obligation to list the names of the witnesses that are going to be called during the trial. And I listed the doctor's name. And jurors are supposed to tell us if they know that doctor, have any biases or whatever, you know, regarding these. And an individual, he raised his hand. He came up to the bench and he said, I know that doctor. And so we get to say, you know, would you be able to listen to her testimony and, you know, judge her as any other witness? And he said, absolutely not. Anything that she says, I will absolutely 100% believe her. She's that good, and everything about her is that good.
Well, that was but that wouldn't eliminate him from the pool.
It did eliminate him from the pool, but it's good to know that we are working with the best people.
So in other words, she could get up and lie, and I believe her. Okay.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. Okay. So the Children's Advocacy Center absolutely has an amazing staff, and people in this community respect those people, and they do wonderful things for the people, or for the kids involved in these cases. The doctor at the Children's Advocacy Center did an exam, discovered that the victim was in fact pregnant.
Didn't know that before that, though, right? Or did they have?
I think the victim had a suspicion, but this is a 13-year-old girl. Lots, you know, going on when you're in middle school with your body and that sort of thing. I think she somewhat had a suspicion, but clearly wasn't sure. But the doctor at the Children's Advocacy Center confirmed that. At that point, a decision was made with the victim and her mother that she would terminate the pregnancy. Evidence was collected after that termination of the pregnancy. The fetus was collected, and it was subsequently sent off to the Kentucky State Police Lab and then to Marshall University for testing.
All right, now explain why that happened.
The Kentucky State Police Lab does not test this type of evidence, fetus, for paternity. It's just something they're not equipped at this point to do. They're in the process of getting that certification. So they have a contract with Marshall University in Huntington, West Virginia. So the evidence was sent to Marshall University.
I have to take a break, but before I go, during this time, where's the dad? What's he doing?
He was interviewed, released at that point as they gathered more information.
He hadn't been charged at that point.
He had not been charged.
Taking a break. 253-5959. Touch star 590 from AT&T. Toll free from anywhere. 1-877-CLK. And this is American DA Live. Ray?
Andrea, so as they had sent this fetus that was as a result of this terminated pregnancy of this 13 or 14 year old.
13.
And how long does it take to get the results of that?
It took about 6 months for the results to come back from Marshall University, which is about a typical, unfortunately, amount of time that we wait for DNA results.
Okay, and what were the results?
It showed, the DNA results showed that the fetus was the belonged to the biological father and the victim of the case.
Okay, so that's the proof.
Yes.
Then. Now, so then what happened?
The defendant was arrested. He adamantly denied the whole encounter, everything about it, and he was placed into custody in jail. Okay. And that's where he sat until we went to trial.
Okay, now this is when and so this was determined that he says I didn't do anything like this, and I'm going to, you prove it.
Yes.
Okay, so that kind of traumatizes victims.
Yes.
And so did that occur?
We did have a trial. The amazing part of this case is when one of these types of cases goes to trial, we have to have a lot of communication with a lot of different people, therapists that the child is seeing, mothers, other family members, the Children's Advocacy Center. During this process, we learned of an organization. Kathy High had heard about them before, but her therapist in the other state actually said, why don't you guys look into Bikers Against Child Abuse?
Now, say that again. Bikers Against Child Abuse. We're not talking about people on bicycles here.
No.
That's right. Yes, we had worked with other organizations of bikers, and I got a contact name for Bikers Against Child Abuse. They all have biker names. The lady I talked to is called Gabby, and she explained that basically this is a group that was started in 1995 by therapists who wanted children to feel empowered, to feel safe, to feel supported, and they do a lot of things to help kids that have made a report. They don't necessarily have to even be a charged case, but
What do they do? What
they
kind of
do things like they'll sit outside someone's home if they're afraid. You know, they'll kind of monitor their neighborhood. And in our case, they got involved with us with the trial. And what happened?
Now, wait a minute. Before you go on, where did that start? Do you know what state it started?
I believe in Utah.
And is it nationwide?
It's nationwide.
And how big is the local chapter? Do you know?
You know, I think they have quite a few, but I don't know the number.
Okay. So you called? Did you call them?
Yes, I called
them. And you told them what was going on, and what did they? What was their reaction?
Well, they were really anxious and ready and willing to be involved in any way they could. So we sort of waited and discussed it with Andrea and, you know, kind of tried to figure out if it's something we could do.
Yeah.
And so what happened, about a week before the trial, the child and her mom were out of state and they were going to be flying to Lexington. But about a week before the trial, they still were out of state. The bikers went to where the girl was living. There were 25 from the state where she lives who went to where she's living and brought her a vest. They give a biker name. In this case, they gave her the name Mo.
Mo.
And they give a teddy bear, and they just, you know, a bunch of, you know, big burly guys, but women too, and they just were telling her, we're going to support you. We're going to, you know, help protect you. We're going to be there for you. And everyone was in tears, they said. So we, you know, we weren't there, but we heard this from some of the people that were there. So the day that they flew in, I went to pick them up at the airport. But when I got there, there were already some of the bikers against child abuse that were at the airport with their motorcycles. They'd gone down to help the victim and her mom come up, you know, at the baggage, to get their baggage, come up. They escorted us to the hotel. They stayed to make sure they got in their room and, you know, met them and introduced themselves. And then the following day, we had to spend the whole day with the victim preparing for the trial, which is terrible for her. She had to go through lots of details, not just, you know, my father had sex with me, but lots
specific
of
stuff.
Specifics,
yeah.
About where, when, you know, exactly what happened. It's really painful and difficult. It was a rough day. But that evening, a group of the bikers came to their hotel, took her and her mom for bike rides, for ice cream. And I really didn't know how they would respond. But the next morning, the mom was just, you know, they had such a light mood. And they were just saying, we had such a great time. And it was wonderful. And then the day of the trial, there were about 7 or 8 of the bikers that came and stuck with her the whole day. And they would ask, you know, who would you like to, you know, stand on this side of you when we walk to the courthouse? And who, you know, we're going to surround you. She was afraid because the dad's family would be at the courthouse and they didn't believe
that he was guilty. Now, she's not brought in except to testify. Is that right? She's not in the courtroom?
Correct. Only in the courtroom. But, you know, our courthouse isn't that big. So we knew that she would most likely encounter her grandparents,
yeah,
and other family members.
So did they sit with her out in the hall?
They did.
Yeah.
They were everywhere that she was. And the counselor from the school had to come testify, and she told me after the trial of a story where it was clear that the victim was getting very nervous and anxious about testifying, and you could see that the fear was starting to take over, which happens a lot, mm-hmm, with our young victims. And she said one of the ladies with the Bikers Against Child Abuse immediately recognized those signs, walked over to her, told her something funny, walked her way away from the situation, and our victim's entire demeanor changed. She became loose. She was laughing again. They are able to take the child out of that scary situation, make them feel safe, mm-hmm, and prepared to testify. And they all go through training.
Oh, they
all do. The bikers go through training to, you know, recognize those and to help the kids and that sort of thing. So, it was truly miraculous, I thought, to watch this big group of bikers in leather vests, their interaction with the victim in this case, and just how safe and great they made her feel.
That is such a nice story. We're going to take this opportunity to go ahead and take our break, and we'll be right back. 359-59, touch star 590 from AT&T, toll free 1-877-777-0590, email jackpatty@wblkam.com. Ray Larson, we're ready to go to trial.
Okay, Andrea, so when this case went to trial, even when they found out that the fetus was his,
yes,
he still says no.
He said no, right. Not mine. I don't believe in science. I don't believe in DNA. Let's go to trial. So okay. We went to trial.
Now, so you had some interesting issues to talk to the jury about in the jury selection process. Let's hear about that.
We, during jury selection, because we knew abortion is a, or the termination of a pregnancy is a very hot topic, we discussed that and told them that they would hear evidence of that. We also just talked about the nature of the case, but we also brought up the fact that they were going to see 7 or 8 biker people in the courtroom, and does anybody have an issue with that?
Did anybody have an issue?
No, not at all. We went to trial. The defense basically was that the victim was a liar. She made all of this up. They skirted around the issue with the DNA. They tried to imply that maybe she had gotten a condom from the trash can and, you know, impregnated herself with that condom. However, the detective in this case did a fantastic job when he was interviewing.
Well, let's say who the detective is.
Detective James Jeffries from the Crimes Against Children Unit did a fantastic job when he interviewed the father and the stepmother and ask them specifically about condoms and whether or not they use condoms. Both of them said absolutely not, there are none in the house. So both the defendant, the father, and the stepmother testified at trial, and of course their testimony was that, oh yeah, we use condoms and throw them away in the trash can. So we got to impeach them with their first statements with the police showing that they were inconsistent.
This is Jack Patty's law school.
Okay.
And so what does impeach mean?
If you say one thing and you say something different later, I get to play the part of the tape or have a detective come up and say, no, you told me this
in
the first interview.
Catch them in a lie.
Yes.
Right?
We caught them lying.
Yeah.
The jury ultimately found
him. How long did the trial take?
It actually lasted 2 days. The victim testified the first day, and she did as good a job as anybody could do under the circumstances. It was very interesting. She's just an adorable girl. Another prosecutor tried it with me, Paco Villalobos. It was his first full week in our office, and Paco sat with me and tried the case with me. But she did a very good job. There were some things that she didn't want to reveal on the stand, which happens sometimes with child victims. So we had to work through that. But she did a really good job.
So how did everybody in the victim's family deal with this? Well, I mean, in the mother, the child, and that sort of thing.
It was really, really difficult. And they went home. They went home the second day of the trial. We arranged for them to go home because we didn't want her to be here any longer than she had to. But then, I don't know if you want me to talk about the verdict, but I was calling them, telling them what was going on. And when we did get a guilty verdict,
what was it?
He was guilty of incest and several other
attempted sodomy and 2 sex abuse counts.
And got us what? How many years?
17.
Okay. Yeah. Now, before we run out of time, I want Kathy to talk about this letter that she got from our little victim.
Well, first of all, she did an excellent victim's impact statement where she talked about, you know, the fact that he had made her go to trial. and talk about this in front of people, and that her brothers and sisters didn't believe her, which are really painful things. But then later, July 3rd, this was a couple months after the trial, she wrote us a letter just wanting to let us know. She said, "I'm thankful for what we've done together. We worked as a team and we survived. I tell my therapist, Miss Laura, how I feel so relieved after everything has happened. I stopped judging myself and I'm proud of it."
Wow, that's wonderful. Thank you guys very much. Update from ABC Next. If you're listening to WVLK AM, stay with us for Live with Lee. If you're listening to 101.5